Okay, well, good afternoon, everybody. My name's Simon Colvin. I'm a partner at Waitmans, where I lead the energy and utilities team. This afternoon, I'm joined by Chris Wilson from Chris Wilson Consulting Limited. I'll ask Chris to introduce himself in a second. This is the latest in our transition series, looking at a number of different angles and issues in relation to the energy and sustainability space. And they're short sort of video recordings for you to watch at your leisure. This is, I think, the seventh in the series. So, Chris, I don't know if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me on. So I'm a, as Simon said, I'm a director of my own limited company. My background is in environmental science, environmental management. About 10 years ago, I finished a PhD in environmental law, which is roughly how we met, I think, about 10 years ago, Simon.
It was, yeah.
And from then on, I've still been involved in science and environmental management and the compliance side. And probably over the past 7 or 8 years, focusing more on energy management, as well as some broader sustainability issues. So I've had a bit of involvement in, was mainly consultancy, but also a little bit in local authority work and also in academia as well.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Chris. And I know we've been working together actually recently because you've been supporting Waitmans in relation to, I suppose, our ISO program. So, ISO, first of all, ISO 14001, and then more recently, 50001 in terms of our energy management system. So, is that sort of quite typical of the work that you're doing with other businesses?
Yeah, I would sort of broadly categorize it all based around risk and risk management, be that avoiding a compliance risk or implication, or be it about a business failing to take advantage of an opportunity of some kind. So
Yes.
almost, that could be having a green credential of something of some kind, or some other opportunity perhaps to save on a resource. So kind of day to day, I get involved in, as you said, supporting with 14001, 50001, and other management systems as well, which will cover energy specifically and some waste standards, as well as a little bit in the quality side as well. As well as doing various bits of project work, so be it supporting with permit applications or planning permissions or fire prevention plans, we've talked about lots in the
Yeah.
past. And then probably the last areas that I do quite a few third-party assessments on sites, as well as some individual competency assessments for the likes of AEMA and Wamitab as well.
Okay, good stuff. And I know you're involved in the it's the Energy Institute, isn't it, as well? You do some stuff with those guys.
Yes, I sit in the Northwest Committee, so support with events and speak occasionally and just other projects that they initiate in the Northwest.
Good stuff. Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you. And I suppose one of the reasons I was keen to sort of have a chat with you as part of the series, Chris, was just to sort of tap into your knowledge and experience in terms of just the world of energy and sustainability at the moment, and really just to think about, I suppose, where things were up to prior to COVID-19 and the sort of impact that you think COVID-19 has had on businesses in this space. Because there's been a lot of discussion, a lot in the news about some of the benefits we're seeing that have been brought by the sort of pandemic that we're currently in the middle of. But yeah, just I suppose perhaps a little bit, Chris, about your views of where we were getting to beforehand, and then and
Yeah.
what made would be interesting.
I think if it was being really sort of fair and trying to be balanced about it, I think it's a mixed sort of picture. I think there's, I'm plugged in and you're plugged in and engaged with environment and sustainability issues. So you're kind of exposed to lots of the positive stuff. And those that aren't perhaps engaged, you don't hear much about them because they're not vociferous about making those points. So I think overall it's very mixed, but in terms of the growing trend, it's accelerating towards areas where businesses have to consider these issues, and we've seen that in the past with different drivers for that, be it legal drivers with, there's not been so much legislation recently, but certainly past 10, 20 years there's been an awful lot which has forced businesses to do it. I think more recently with cost drives, et cetera, to be shrewd around the use of resources is critical as well for businesses. So a lot have been forced in to look at these issues that way. And then lastly, it's probably around pressures from customers and the public in general to be doing the right thing. And we've seen that recently with how businesses have responded to COVID, that some very strong brands have been badly affected and some perhaps weaker brands have done a little bit better in how they've responded. So that kind of social license is is being strengthened as well. And I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago since we were talking about the climate crisis, climate emergency, and Greta Thunberg and Extinction Rebellion, etc. And things have changed an awful lot since then. And so probably pre COVID, I would sort of summarise by saying that it's been growing, but probably from a low base. But for a lot of businesses, they're doing an awful lot, while others are having to slowly make those adaptations, whether they perhaps realise it or not.
And have you seen, I suppose you sort of mentioned the outset, some of the work you do for public sector, if you like. Do you see a difference in terms of the speed of travel between the public and private sector and the extent to which people are buying in? We've seen all these sort of climate emergency declarations from local authorities. We talked about sort of customer shareholder sort of pressure on private companies. But do you see a difference in the speed of travel between sort of the two sides?
I think it's funny when you mentioned climate emergencies, because there was probably a huge rush, and I think it was probably 70% plus of local authorities have declared an emergency. But there's probably a couple that you can name that have actually done anything different as a result of. And I know we've had discussions around the legal implications from that and the challenges that will be raised, etc. And I guess that's all gone into the background a little bit at present. So I think sometimes certain elements are easier to do in the local government level. The policy side is something they're probably stronger at. Businesses tend to be a bit more reactive and actually a bit more agile. They can move faster. It's hard to make a comparison, but I would tend to split it that way, that we're good on policy and local government side, but perhaps faster and better action on the business side. There's clearly a mix there that if we can accelerate that together, then we're heading in the right place.
Okay, that's quite interesting. And I suppose we talked a little bit about, sort of voluntary and sort of compulsory requirements. And I suppose, my perception of it was that the compulsory requirements, legal requirements, the scope of those was expanding and growing. A lot of that obviously was due to European requirements, and we're in the middle of Brexit and that, you've got the Environment Bill coming through that's sort of talking about different things. But I suppose it's just thinking about that impact of regulation and the fact that I think obviously as part of this sort of COVID program, a lot of the reporting requirements have been relaxed at the moment. But again, what's your sort of sense amongst the business community of regulation in this area? Do they feel it's overregulated? Do they feel there's need for reform? Are they hopeful about what might come from the Brexit process, if you like?
I think that there's I guess there's a lot of frustration in the business sector, I would say, about the lack of joined upness with some of the regulation, that there is lots of similarities in the requirements, but then the differences are subtle enough to make it difficult to get your head around whether or not you're required to do something and how you're required to do that. So I think businesses would certainly favour that consistency, and part of that is the devolved governments as well, as well as with Europe as well. They're clearly going to be a move away from a central approach over time, naturally. So I think that's a challenge for business. That's a risk they've got, particularly if they're multi-geographic, national, as well as multi-regional within the UK.
Okay, well, that's interesting. And I suppose, a lot of the sort of so discussion and chat at the moment that you see in the press and the market looking at, how do we try and retain some of the good things that we've said have happened as a result of COVID? So we've, reduction sort of transport, travel, those sorts of things. But also, how do we try and put, I suppose, the green economy at the heart of, the recovery, if you like? And that's something that's not just being talked about in the UK, but sort of internationally. Have you got any thoughts on that, Chris? What's your sort of perspective?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it feels a little odd talking about positives of things, but I think we're at that stage of the recovery, in inverted commas, that we are looking at those things, and I think a lot of businesses have done and have demonstrated huge change in a very short period of time. So what I'm kind of feeling at the minute is that there's two camps, really. There's one that's saying let's build back stronger and better than we were before, with green issues being at the centre. And then there's probably a little bit on the other side where it's, let's get back as quickly as we can to what the old business as usual was. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit frustrating. There's still an element of that. But I think generally speaking, there's a consensus that we're not going to be the same as what we were. And why would we lose those benefits that we've had? And lots of companies have saved or will save huge amounts in terms of travel cost and time and just other benefits in terms of staff well-being, et cetera, that it would be crazy to go back and regress to the way it was before. And I'm hearing lots of examples from businesses that weren't set up to work remotely and they've, you know, got on with it, embraced it, and they won't go back. And I know Waitman's are pretty much the same, that, you know, it's working, and you guys were a little bit ahead of the curve, actually, because you've been doing this for the last couple of years with Agile working. And other businesses are certainly reflecting on a lack of that flexibility to do that. Clearly it's different depending on what sector you're in. But the, you know, the increase in time is probably as valuable or as much of a valuable resource as the cost side that businesses get back.
Yeah, okay. And so I suppose we've talked about some of the, I suppose, what you might describe as sort of macro type issues. Trying to just think about some of the things that, I suppose, you know, the benefit of your knowledge and wisdom of working with companies. What are some of the, you know, for people watching to today's recording, just some of the easy wins, some of the things that businesses should look to do, areas they should focus on if they want to start, if you like, you know, getting engaged and making a stance in this area?
Yeah, I think it's easy to sort of try and be pious about what businesses should do. I think the first thing I was trying to do is to understand the context of the business, what the issues are that are relevant, what the business strategy is, what the things that make the business tick and are important culturally as well as within the sector that business is within. So I think working through those sorts of discussions is a good starting point, because then it allows you to align any environmental goals with the broader business goals, and sometimes it's they don't align at all, but by I guess engaging with how the business operates, you can perhaps make some change more covertly than have to go head on with companies and say, look, what you're doing isn't the right way to operate. And I know lots of other environmental practitioners suffer from that or feel demoralized because they'll make what's look like good suggestions, but they don't get taken on board because the business is just so different than what the business is used to. So getting that side of it right is important, and also understanding the data that the business impacts actually have. Because if we don't have that data and it can't be interrogated and understood and evaluated, then it's difficult to know where to focus your efforts. And also to measure any changes that do get made. So those are maybe a couple of areas to focus on.
Okay, understood. That's very helpful. And I suppose it's a bit of a common theme, really. But again, I suppose common pitfalls. And if you like, what do people commonly get wrong when they're trying to sort of make a start? And then what do they have to go back and almost like revisit? So because my experience of these things is people sort of set off with, you know, a huge amount of positivity and you know, momentum, and then actually it's they get some way down the line and think, oh, hang on a second, maybe if we've done this differently or that differently. What are some of those common mistakes?
Yeah, I think it's like a fatigue thing, isn't it? You know, you go in and you probably hit it too hard, put all your resources into the first couple of actions, and if there's not that traction, then they fall away. I suppose it's sort of reverting perhaps what I said previously about, you know, using all those good project management techniques and change management principles to, you know, put a good basis in place, understanding the data, the impacts, and then making the changes that are the most easy to implement. And that's what all the ISO structures do. You know, they look to give you that platform so that you can spend your time and understand all the business has to deal with, and then take a very measured approach to making that change.
You know, it's interesting you make those points actually, because I suppose as a business, that's where we got to really. It was looking for that framework and structure, And for us, it was adopting that ISO framework with your help. And I think you're right. I think one of the things that, and you probably recognise this, that we struggled as a business with was actually getting the data, particularly in terms of things like energy consumption and just, you know, engaging landlords and just getting some of that basic information, which I don't know, to be honest, before we started on in this process and got engaged in it, it's not something that I thought would be difficult to get, but that's proved to be one of the greatest challenges. So just working out what, you know, what's the carbon footprint and, you know, what are you consuming? And then, but also in terms of things like travel as well. So yeah, people talk about big data at the moment, don't they, and MI, but it's just, it seems to be at the very heart of this, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And is that, I think you want, you know, you want to take advantage of that enthusiasm at the beginning and set challenging targets to reduce travel. But if you don't have those basic data collection mechanisms in place, then you can make lots of change, but you've no way of knowing what impact it's had. And you can get into lots of detail about how to verify that data, et cetera. But generally speaking, you use the established methodologies that exist on this. And those become the objectives that you need to set, is to improve those mechanisms rather than actually improve the travel straight away off the bat, because there may be things you can do, but it's very important to have that baseline to know what your starting point is.
Yeah, no, that's right. Okay, no, it's been really interesting, Chris. Thank you. I mean, that's certainly, for me, certainly the two learning points there for me as having sort of gone through this process was definitely around data. If we had the time again, making sure we'd sort of given some proper thought to the collation of that and putting it in place. And then also just the benefits of using an existing recognized framework such as ISO, just because it gives you some real structure and sort of focus to what you're doing. Chris, that's been really, really helpful. Thank you for joining us as part of one of our sort of fireside chats. That's been really interesting. Is there anything else that you'd want to share with the audience, with the viewers?
I mean, perhaps just to think that if anything the crisis has taught us right now is that we can respond extremely quickly to things. And I think there's always been that argument in the past with, say, the climate crisis, that it's too big to tackle. The change would be too disruptive. I think this has shown that we can nationally and globally, in fact, make massive change to how we operate. And also that we perhaps need to not just, we can't just replicate this every year, because looking at the data, I think we're estimated to have about 8% reduction in emissions globally this year, which doesn't feel that much to me when you have completely locked down the whole world pretty much. And to achieve the targets to hit less than 1.5 degree warming, we'd have to do that every year over the next 10 years. You know, it's incredible. So clearly there's learnings there as to how we need to adapt to be able to meet some of those challenges. And if anything, it perhaps will make a lot of people realize some of the change that has to be made. And that change should then help to avoid other major disruptions in the future. We're talking about climate change impacts. So hopefully there's a stimulus there to really get our heads around making that change now so those can be avoided.
I think you're right. A couple of thoughts come to me. Sort of one is just perhaps people's recognition as to, yeah, you're right, we've an 8% difference in terms of people being completely locked down, so transport's only part of the problem. You think about housing stock, everybody's at home, you know, we've had warm weather, so people have been using the heating. So there are other areas in terms of things that sort of people need to focus on. I think for me, the real acid test will come when we perhaps look to the COP that's meant to happen in Glasgow this year, which I think I understand has been postponed until next year. Yeah. And really looking at the extent to which the learning from this in terms of the lockdown is picked up by the sort of member states, and people then look, say, oh, actually, okay, how can we learn from that and how can we use it as a springboard to something better? So I think, yeah, that for me will be the real test as to how much we've learned from all of this.
And we've also seen that the links between environmental issues and economic issues and social issues, they're all merging together. Yeah. And you can't look at them in isolation. And from a business perspective, the decisions that get made on a purely economic basis don't stop there. And we've seen that with how some companies have been vilified for the use of the furlough scheme, for instance. Some have been highly praised for adapting their to make PPE, etc. So all of a sudden, there's lots to consider, all stemming around the same kind of sustainability agenda. You know,
good stuff. All right, Chris. Well, that's been really, really great. Thank you for your time. what I would say to anybody watching today's session is, if they've got any questions for me or any questions for you, please just email those questions in, and I'll be happy to share them with Chris. We'll come back to you. But thanks very much, I suppose, dialing in to watch the session. Keep an eye out for future sessions. And just thanks again to you, Chris.
Thank you. Pleasure.